Welcome to this podcast from the Medical Journal of Australia. My name is Sam Hunt, the MJA's news and online editor. Today we are discussing advances in breast cancer treatment and how innovation can lead to early detection, more effective treatments, and a better quality of life. My special guests are Dr. Negan Sedegat, a specialist breast surgeon and surgical oncologist, and Associate Professor Jeremy Hsu, a specialist breast cancer surgeon. Both are at Macquarie University Hospital, which sponsored this podcast. Dr. Sedegat and Associate Professor Hsu, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for the opportunity to participate in this podcast.
Dr. Sedegat, I'll start with you. What is the current incidence rate of breast cancer in Australia?
So in Australia, currently, breast cancer affects 1 in 7 women. And what has been observed over the past decade is that this incident rate has in fact increased by about 30% over 10 years. And many, you know, in simplistic terms, we might say that the incidence is in fact increasing. However, there are many reasons for that. So it's not so much that the disease itself is becoming more prevalent, but rather due to the concerted efforts in raising awareness, early detection, and breast screening, we're just picking up breast cancer at an earlier stage.
And Negan, what are some of the risk factors for breast cancer in Australian women?
So I like to approach this in terms of, and especially when I speak with my patients as well, is that risk factors, some we can modify and some we can't modify. So the two biggest risk factors for breast cancer are age and gender. And we really can't modify those. And the other things that we can't modify is related to a woman's menstrual cycle. So in other words, when they start menstruation, their age of menarche, we know that a younger age of menarche, less than 12, will increase a woman's risk of breast cancer, and later menopause. But there are factors that we can modify and we can discuss and counsel our patients about. And that's most notably related to diet and lifestyle.
And now I'll bring in Associate Professor Jeremy Hsu. Associate Professor Hsu, how is breast cancer typically diagnosed in Australia?
We're really lucky in Australia. I think that we've got a very evolved and mature screening system. And so what I mean by screening, and I think that many of the audience would be familiar with this, is that we're basically looking at the age group and the population that is at risk. And so this is mainly for breast cancer is in women over the age of 50. And screening just involves a regular mammogram. A letter is sent out as soon as a woman turns 50 to start the screening, and so they're otherwise healthy. And I think that what this does is that it means that we're looking at the population, they're getting reviewed, their mammograms looked at by specialist radiologists, and that means that then cancers can be picked up very early. Any abnormalities are picked up early, they're biopsied and investigated early, and so quite a number of our breast cancers are now picked up in Australia via this screening. Now, obviously, the other group of women that come to end up needing treatment for breast cancer are those that detect a change in their breast, and that could be a skin change, it could be a lump, and then they go and see their GP, and then they get what's called the triple assessment, which is then a thorough history and examination, the appropriate breast imaging, which is usually a mammogram plus or minus ultrasound, and then followed by a biopsy.
And Associate Professor Hsu, another question for you, one that many GPs may be wondering, is what can a patient expect from their first specialist consultation?
Usually when a patient comes into my rooms, like with this sort of referral, I think a big part of it in the beginning is to ensure that the patient is as comfortable as possible, because it's a very stressful situation. And so a big part of the first conversation is really ensuring that the patient understands that they are in the right place, that their GP's done exactly what they should be doing, and they've done a good job in picking up the suspicious findings and sending them along to the right place. And then in the consultation, it's about gathering the important information with regards to breast cancer, and that includes the family history, the hormonal risk factors, the history of the lump, any other associated features, and then just a general medical history, just to look at comorbidities and other medications. As part of that, when we look at the physical examination, a big part of this is assessing the features of the lump and the potential breast cancer. It's basically with a treatment focus. And so that means that we're looking at the factors that would influence the types of treatment recommendations that we're going to make.
And Dr. Sedigit, I'll go to you now. What are some of those treatment options?
I think it's really important to differentiate between non-invasive breast cancer and invasive breast cancer, because it has very different treatment implications sometimes for patients. So non-invasive breast cancer includes most commonly ductal carcinoma in situ. And the effective treatment for ductal carcinoma in situ is surgery combined with radiation therapy if the patient chooses to undergo lumpectomy, or what we call breast conservation surgery. But if there's extensive ductal carcinoma in situ and the patient undergoes a mastectomy, sometimes the patient can avoid radiation therapy. In these patients with non-invasive breast cancer, chemotherapy really doesn't have a role in prolonging survival and reducing the risk of recurrence. So the important aspect there is really their surgery, with or without radiation therapy. And sometimes these days we're also completing genetic profiling on these patients. And if the ductal carcinoma in situ is in fact estrogen or progesterone receptor positive, that their therapy will be supplemented with endocrine treatment, which serves to reduce the level of estrogen within the body. If it is of the invasive form, then it really is personalized to the extent of disease for that patient. So not every patient with invasive breast cancer will have chemotherapy, because it really depends on whether that cancer is confined to the breast, whether it's then spread to the lymph node as well. And further to that, not just whether it's spread to the lymph node, but how much cancer burden is within that lymph node as well. So there are patients with invasive disease who may have similar treatment to a patient with non-invasive disease. So they'll have surgery, radiation therapy, and endocrine treatment afterwards. But for the patient who has involvement of the lymph node to a certain extent, they may require chemotherapy as well.
And Dr. Sedigit, I know you wanted to mention neoadjuvant systemic treatment as well.
An exciting paradigm that's really shifted breast cancer treatment over the past 5 to 10 years is the utilization of what we call neoadjuvant systemic treatment. So in patients with invasive disease, there is now a role for those patients to have systemic therapy first and then to have surgery. And I think our GPs really play an important role in counselling patients about this possibility.
My special guests today are Dr. Negan Sedigit, a specialist breast surgeon and surgical oncologist, and Associate Professor Jeremy Hsu, a specialist breast cancer surgeon. Both are at Macquarie University Hospital. Associate Professor Hsu, let me ask you now about some of those questions patients have when they come to you about whether they'll have to undergo chemotherapy, or questions about whether they'll have to undergo surgery.
It's very interesting, the assumptions that patients have, and this is often informed by the internet, by the fact that breast cancer is really common in the community. And so the majority of times patients know of somebody that has had breast cancer and has undergone treatment for that. And so therefore, again, another part of the consultation is basically taking the time to address those assumptions, ensuring that the patient understands that breast cancer treatment is an individualized treatment. So the treatment recommendations that are made are specific for that particular patient with that particular sort of cancer and with all the other factors that go into it. So it's very different to other forms of medicine where, you know, the one treatment is applicable to all people with that disease. This one is for breast cancer is very individualized. So patients may come with a preconceived idea that they only need surgery and they only want a mastectomy, i.e. removal of the entire breast. Some people think that, oh, I've heard that everybody needs chemotherapy and that's going to be terrible because I lose my hair and I feel terrible. And, you know, some people think, oh, radiation is going to be terrible. And so there's lots and lots of these sorts of assumptions that patients may come in with. And I think a big part of it is making sure that they understand that breast cancer is often treated with multiple modalities and patients may need some or all of those treatments.
And let's turn now to the care and support that patients can access. And I understand you're very fortunate at Macquarie University Hospital to have a McGrath breast cancer nurse. Dr. Sedigat, can you tell me about the importance of that role?
I think it's absolutely crucial. And this is really with much advocacy and involvement from our patient groups, notably the McGrath Foundation. Really, what they identified was that no patient who is diagnosed with breast cancer should ever feel alone in their journey. And the breast care nurse provides that support, not only in terms of information and education, but also in terms of that emotional support as well. They see the full range of patients who go through an equally full spectrum of breast cancer from the very early stage to extremely advanced stages. And they're so well informed of the pathway and the options for treatment that I feel that patients have this port of support and a port of call where they feel comfortable to ask any question from their breast care nurse. And they don't feel at any point that they're alone in that journey. It's a time of increased vulnerability for patients. And I think the breast care nurse plays an incredibly vital role in that.
You spoke earlier about the importance of a multidisciplinary team. Can I ask you how much has breast surgery evolved during your career?
The surgical techniques that we use in breast surgery have evolved, and surgeons are at the front line of that. And really, it is the responsibility of the surgeon to inform patients about their options. But as more and more patients become aware of these options, and our patient support groups and networks advocate a lot more, they become more informed about these new methods and techniques. So one of the best examples of this is breast reconstruction. And in the beginning of my training, really as breast surgeons, we weren't doing that many breast reconstructions until the advent of oncoplastic breast surgery came through. And there were a number of pioneers throughout Australia who really began to offer this to patients and were training breast surgeons in those techniques. And I was fortunate to be one of those as well to receive that training. And so it meant that we were now having discussions with patients about the option of having an immediate breast reconstruction at the time of mastectomy. And now this has become a standard of care approach where we discuss that with every woman, regardless of age as well. And so what I found was that in the beginning, women were not aware of this option. But now many, many more women are aware, certainly in metropolitan centres.
And Associate Professor Xu, let me go to you now and ask, what is it about the breast as a part of the female anatomy that appears to attract more cancer than other parts of the body?
That's a great question. That question, I actually get asked that by patients quite a lot. And the way that I think about it is that, first of all, cancer is basically a result of cells growing out of control. So normally in the body, we've got a pretty tight regulated system of cells developing, serving their function, and then disappearing, right? And that just happens. But like if you imagine, say, an automated piece of machinery in a factory that is doing the same thing over and over again, the longer that it goes for, there's always a chance of some error occurring, and it may just, instead of stopping, just continue going or it may break down. And that's the way that I think about cancer. So it's basically the normal checks, the normal function of the cell stops working for whatever reason and basically results in a cell that just keeps growing and keeps dividing and keeps growing and keeps dividing, and then all those cells do the same thing, and that's basically what cancer is. And I think that what causes that error to occur is related to a number of factors, and we know that probably about 75% of breast cancers occur just because of what we call an error, right? A cell error or cell change. And the things that influence that are not things that we can definitely point the finger at. It's a combination of the individual's own genetics, right? Their own DNA, the exposures that they've had in the environment, that could be food, that could be the air that they breathe, everything. Like, it's just whatever combination has caused that error to occur. And it's not one particular thing. So the other component specific to breast is that we know that if the breasts change a lot, so there's times when the breast increases the number of cells within the breast, and then there are times when there are less cells. So if you imagine you have all these changes that are occurring, that also then potentially increases the risk of errors occurring. And so the breasts in particular have lots of changes. At puberty, they change. Pregnancy, they change. Breastfeeding, they change. Finishing breastfeeding, they change. Menopause, they change. And then every month with the menstrual cycle, they change.
Dr. Sedigat and Associate Professor Xu, thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, thank you for having me and for discussing this really important topic too.
Yeah, again, thanks for the opportunity to participate in this podcast.
My special guests have been Dr. Negan Sedigat, a specialist breast surgeon and surgical oncologist, and Associate Professor Jeremy Xu, a specialist breast cancer surgeon, both at Macquarie University Hospital, which sponsored this podcast. You can find more podcasts on the Medical Journal of Australia website at mja.com.au or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks so much for listening.